Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hey, happy Monday, everybody.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. This is Molly Vogt.
And I am Kim Munson.
And we are the AmeriChicks on KDMT, Denver's Money Talk Radio. And if it's your first time tuning in, we want to just remind you our focus. We are sleuths for truth.
You got it. Magnifying glasses.
Ugh. And it takes Nancy Drews to really find it all. And some help with some of our friends, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're looking at issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. Because let's face it, it doesn't matter if you have an R or a D or an L or a G or whatever behind your political name. You just sometimes don't know the rules.
Sometimes they lose their way.
In the proper role of government. Mm-hmm. So we've got to invite somebody in who does understand the proper role of government to help us get through that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. So we happen to have Rob Nadelson in the studio with us. Hey, Rob, welcome.
Great to be here.
Great to have you.
I am not an AmeriChick.
You are an Ameri guy.
AmeriStud.
AmeriStud.
Okay. Wow.
He is an AmeriStud. Yeah.
All right. There's taking one. You are a stud, Rob. You know, everybody can follow Rob Nadelson, of course, at the Independence Institute. He's a senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence, heads up the Article 5 Information Center there. He was a law professor for 25 years, but the big one that I like to toot his horn about and why he's here today is to prove why he is smarter than SCOTUS.
What?
So Kim and I, we like to play a little game of, are you smarter than big government? And we've been asking people to prove it. You know, government comes up with these solutions, but yeah, they don't always seem to be the best solutions. They don't always seem to help us.
They come up with solutions to problems they create.
That they create, and they make them bigger and worse and never ruin a crisis. And we know that. But, you know, it seems like as our founding fathers said that they should divide up the government's powers into three different branches. And then, of course, only give the government certain powers and the rest is reserved for the states and for the people. And so we always have seemed to look to the Supreme Court to say, you guys know. I mean, you interpret the law. You guys are supposed to really understand the founding fathers' original intent when they wrote the Constitution. And so regardless of what the president does and the legislature does, we're going to look to you to say yes or no, this is okay legally, right? And a lot of Supreme Court justices over the years have looked to Rob Nadelson's papers to really figure out what is the original intent of the Constitution. And if it's not totally clear to them, this is the expert they go to, is Rob Nadelson.
Well, I want to make clear that a lot is a bit of an exaggeration. And secondly, I want to make clear that whatever Supreme Court case you don't like, I'm not to blame. I didn't do it.
It's always good to get those disclaimers out there.
That's
early,
right.
Rob.
Yeah.
Don't blame me.
Yeah. So today we've got a couple of Supreme Court cases that you've been calling out, Rob. You've been saying that they weren't exactly correct on a couple of the cases, and we're going to get to those later on in the show. But before we do that, there's so much in the news today. I just wanted to ask you, Rob and Kim, what's on your radar as far as current events?
I'm going to let Kim answer that one.
Okay. Go, Kimmy.
Well, I think the number one thing on my heart is I cannot believe that Congress broke for recess. I cannot believe that they did not stay there and get things done that they promised that they were going to get done. And I think a lot of people are just really frustrated with it. And so that's one of the number one things. Secondly, I had a conversation with a friend of mine this weekend, and she had always been a Trump supporter. And she said, you know, talk to me about this. She said, I'm a little concerned with, you know, some of the people that have either been fired or have left the administration and you know, all the news reports out there. She said, I'm really, really concerned. And I said, you know, Molly and I have taken a look at it. When you peel everything back, I mean, I don't love everything that President Trump does, But when you look at the quality of people typically around him, and he gets up every day and he's working to roll back regulations, and I really think he's trying to do what is best for the American people. And like I say, I don't agree with him on everything, but I think he's doing a lot of really great things. And I think that's one of the reasons why Congress has not filled the appointments that he's needed to do to get his work done. I think that on both sides of the aisle, they're trying to just slow down any potential decisions. Because if we get a chance to really start to have success, I think the establishment across the spectrum is really nervous about that. So that's kind of what's on my radar.
I agree with you 100%, and I think it's very sad. On the one hand, I think, you know what, our government should not go on recess. Why do they get to take a break when they're not doing their job? We're not paying them to go on vacation. We're paying them to get the job done. We hire them for certain things. They know that. We want them to repeal Obamacare and replace with something that will allow the free market to actually have lower prices and more options for every individual, not just the wealthy and not just the political elite that carve themselves out of the rules. And on the other hand, I think, hey, maybe they should go on recess. What the heck? They're not doing us any good anyway.
They're not doing anything anyway.
Right? What's the point? Are we paying? Or is it per diem for their food? Maybe they should go home.
Well, I think, what have they done for the last 7 years? They have passed all these votes to repeal Obamacare. They had no plan. And I wonder if they just have gone to Washington and first day they move the papers on one side of the desk to the other. And the next day they go in and they move them to the other side. And all the lobbyists and everybody around goes, oh, that's a great job. I don't know, but I'm a little ticked off about it.
Well, and I think, you know, as we talk about what is the proper role of government, and that's a good question that we always ask Rob Nadelson, what is their goal? What is their role? What should they be doing? And I think they have forgotten 100%. All congressmen and women have forgotten what they're there for.
Well, maybe not 100%, but close. Anyway. You're in a mood this Monday, Molly.
I, you know what? If it, in a private industry, if you hire somebody to do a job and they don't do it, you fire them. Right?
Yep.
So, anyways. So this is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. And we're talking about current events and things that are on our radar. And we're going to dissect them as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. Rob Nadelson is in studio. We're going to talk about the proper role of government and possibly some Supreme Court decisions that weren't totally right on. And then talk about other things that are on our radar. If you have some things you'd like to discuss, give us a call. We'll be right back. If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment, and closing fees are limited. Active duty or retired military, reserves, and surviving spouses may qualify. Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook have spent decades finding the correct loan to suit your unique financial situation. Give Home Mortgage Alliance a call at 303-888-2732. That's 303-888-2732. Or check them out on our AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com.
Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender and sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516 or visit her online at Karen-Levine.com and tell her the AmeriChicks sent you. Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Have a great night out and watch the best movies under the stars at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Beginning Friday, August 4th, the triple feature at 88 Drive-In will include the Emoji Movie, Dark Tower, and Valerian. Admission is $8 per person, and children under 12 are free. Stay for one or all three. Be sure to visit their delicious snack bar to help 88 Drive-In Theater continue to bring you the best in movie entertainment. Get their special pizza deal Monday through Thursday. Receive one 12-ounce pizza and two 16-ounce sodas for just $11. Be sure to try the delicious funnel cake with up to four toppings to choose from. For more info on movie showings and times, visit 88drivein.net and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
We are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. It is a marvelous Monday, and we are so jazzed to have our good friend Rob Nadelson in studio with us. He is it constitutional jurisprudence?
Oh. There she is.
I said it. How's that?
Senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence.
Yeah, I said
at the Independence Institute, which is Colorado's free market think tank.
You know, hey Rob, let me ask one other thing. I was doing some home. I was I wasn't stalking you, but I was doing some research.
Why not? Darn.
The only one that
hope blasted.
I was looking at your bio, and it said that you were a senior fellow also at the Heartland Institute as well as the Montana Policy Center. I mean, are you doing all those things still?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
In fact, I just had a paper put out by the Heartland Institute, which is located near Chicago. They've been around for many, many years, and they do a lot of state issues, but they're state issues with national implications. And they have a center called the Center for Constitutional Reform. And so I wrote a paper for them, which was, what could a balanced budget amendment look like? And that paper just came out. You know, how can we draft a balanced budget amendment so the budget actually gets balanced and so that the people in the swamp can't find a way around it?
Because they do that a lot. There's a lot of things that are offline. And that's why I've been a little concerned about a balanced budget amendment is all the stuff that they do
well,
offline.
Yeah, the trick, Kim, is, well, let me back up. Most of the balanced budget proposals talk in terms of words and phrases that are not defined in the Constitution. And they may not be defined in the amendment, or they may be defined in the amendment poorly. So by that I mean words like appropriations, outlays, revenues, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The balanced budget amendment I came up with is designed to fit into the scheme of the current Constitution, and with one exception, all the terms it uses are terms that are already in the Constitution, whose content is well defined. So that's an example of how it's different.
Okay, excellent. Well, that wasn't even what we're going to talk about today, Molly, but I find that totally fascinating.
But anyway, that's an example of something I do for the Heartland Institute.
Love it.
For the Montana Policy Institute, it's not as active an organization. It's a much smaller organization. My role there is mostly consultative. They'll say to me, we want to put out a study on, you know, the which of what, whom do you suggest might do it, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, and then right here at the Independence Institute, which does a tremendous amount of good work here in Colorado. So, thank you. And it's always great to have you here. We're going to get to have you here once a month. And so we're really looking forward to that. We have that scheduled out. So you have just written a paper recently, August 4th, which I have thought about this a lot. And this is absolutely fascinating. Why federal campaign finance disclosure laws are unconstitutional. Now, for some reason, I think that I'm a constitutional scholar because I've been thinking about this a lot, Rob Nadelson. But let's delve into this. Why is that? Why are federal campaign finance laws unconstitutional? And I thought it was because of freedom of speech, but this paper says something different.
Now, I approach this from the direction of the Constitution as it actually was written, what it actually means. The Supreme Court has heard a number of cases involving campaign finance laws, and they have no trouble with upholding them. But that is not really what the founders intended. Kim, there are basically two reasons. One is there is limited power given to Congress in the Constitution to govern what's called the manner of holding elections. But what that means is such things as what districts members of Congress will be elected from, what day the voting will be held on, whether members of Congress will be elected by a majority vote or only a plurality. In other words, the biggest vote getter wins even if he doesn't win a majority. Those are the kinds of powers that were intended to be given to Congress. It was never intended to be given to Congress the power to regulate campaigns. How candidates interacted with each other and how they interacted with the electorate was a reserved power. It was reserved to the states. The states would determine such questions as whether one candidate had defamed or libeled another, The states would determine such questions as whether a candidate was being corrupt in the course of the campaign, whether there was bribery used, that sort of thing. So one of the reasons that campaign finance rules at the federal level, or not at the state level, but at the federal level, are unconstitutional is that simply was not an enumerated power given to Congress. The other reason has to do with the First Amendment. And you touched on a common, very common, but I think erroneous belief, Kim. And that is that if I contribute $100 to, you know, an advertisement on television sliming candidate Molly Vogt, that is
shame.
Yeah, that is freedom of speech. But actually, from the founder's standpoint, it's not. It's covered under the rubric of freedom of the press. If I speak through a medium, and it doesn't have to be a newspaper, any medium, whether it be a placard or a letter to the editor or an electronic medium.
Even radio?
Even radio. That is freedom of the press. And one of the things that marks off freedom of the press from freedom of speech is freedom of the press can be exercised anonymously, right? I can come on the radio and say that my name is
Billy Bob.
Dwayne Gallstone, right?
trying to make people happy when they listen to the show.
If I'm Alexander Hamilton, I can say that my name is Publius because yes. that's the name they use yes. in the Federalist. And that was that power of anonymity, that anonymity was a core part of freedom of the press. And so many of these campaign finance laws force people who contribute to speaking through the media with disclosing their identities. And everybody seems to love disclosure until you understand what the costs of mm-hmm. it are. Mm-hmm. And the founders understood what the costs of it are. Among other things, if you contribute to political discussion through the media, you can have your life ruined mm-hmm. if people know what your name is.
Have lost jobs.
They've mm-hmm. lost jobs. That's right. When I was running for governor of Montana.
I didn't know you ran for governor of Montana.
When I was running for governor of Montana, a businessman put up a big Nadelson for governor sign. And a local school superintendent saw the sign and said, you know, that guy does business with our school board. Not anymore, he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
The direct use of the power of government to retaliate. And even if it's not that kind of retaliation, you should be able to send a letter to the editor, for example, or contribute $100 to that aforesaid commercial without it having to take over your life. Furthermore, what you say through the media, you have a right to have it considered on its merit, not, Kim Munson said it. We know she's just a right-wing extremist. So we'll just dispose of that without even considering.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The founders used the Latin expression. They said, quid non quis. In other words, you got the right to consider what the person says, quid, not who the person is, quis. So a core part of freedom of the speech was this right of anonymity. And so when you think about it, many of these campaign finance laws, the disclosure laws, really are unconstitutional, both at the federal level because there's no enumerated power that Congress has to pass them, and also because the First Amendment was designed to prohibit them.
But then, Rob, what has happened is, as you can see, there are different entities that do want anonymity. And so you see these 527s and independent expenditure committees. I mean, I think we should just get all that out of there, get rid of all this. And wasn't it McCain-Feingold that was the chief one?
Right. What needs to happen is the federal government needs to get out of this because the federal government, specifically Congress, is in the business of effectively regulating the campaigns of people who run against the members of Congress who write the laws. It's a screaming conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm, it is.
But I would also say, frankly, I think the states ought to be allowed to experiment in this area. If a state wants to experiment with limiting a campaign contribution to $600 or so, I think the state ought to be able to have that flexibility.
Now, that is my next question, and it's a big question. If something is unconstitutional at the federal level, and the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, so if it's unconstitutional here, wouldn't it be unconstitutional down at the state level also?
No. The Constitution is designed for the most part to regulate the conduct of the federal government. There are parts of the Constitution, for example, Article 1, Section 10, which limit what states can do. But most of the Constitution, including the Bill of Rights, was designed to deal only with the federal government. Now, what has happened is that, for various reasons, the U.S. Supreme Court has been taking these rules that were designed to apply to Congress or to other agencies of the federal government and applying to them to state legislatures as well. There are people who argue that that is correct because of the 14th Amendment. There are other people who argue that's incorrect. I tend to side with them. But even if it is appropriate to apply some rules to the states, it doesn't follow to me that every single federal First Amendment rule has to apply in exactly those terms to every single state. I think the states should have some additional flexibility.
Okay, so I have to ask the next question. So First Amendment, though. Freedom of speech, that is a constitutional right across the spectrum, isn't it? Freedom of the press,
right. Although
it should be across the spectrum.
Right.
So how do you determine, you know, what is across the spectrum and what isn't? Is it going back to the Article 1, Section 10? Is that the spot?
Well, no. In the case of the First Amendment says Congress shall pass no law. That's the wording. It doesn't say anything about state legislatures. It says Congress shall pass no law. So if you're dealing with something passed by Congress, like McCain-Feingold, then the First Amendment applies.
Got it. Okay.
If you're dealing with something passed by the state of Montana General Assembly, except in some unusual circumstances, then you look to the state constitution, which also, of course, protects freedom of speech. But the exact limits of what we consider freedom of speech in Montana may be somewhat different from what is applied at the federal level. That is what federalism is all about, right?
But what if you had, and we're going to have to go to break here, but so let's say that you see all of these kids on college campuses that are growing up right now trying to stop freedom of speech. So let's just say, how about they all move to New York? They're all there and they've all gotten elected to office. And they decide, you know, who can have free speech and who can't. I mean, are you saying that that is a possibility?
I'm saying that the New York Constitution has a protection for freedom of speech.
Okay.
Right?
But it doesn't have to. But it wouldn't have to.
It wouldn't have to. But, you know, if we let's say that New York decided to suppress all freedom of speech, all speech that the politicians disagreed with. Now you have another section of the Constitution kicking in, and this does apply to the states.
Okay.
And that says that every state must have a Republican form of government. You can't have that kind of absolute dictatorship. So I'm talking about allowing the state some flexibility as to whether their campaign finance limits are $600 or $800. I'm not saying that a state can simply crush all opposition. That would violate the federal constitution.
Fascinating, Rob Nadelson. We'll be right back.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back to the Americhicks, Molly and Kim on KDMT. We are playing a little game of Are You Smarter Than the Supreme Court Justice? Because we have Rob Nadelson in studio with us, and he is. So there you go. So we're going to tell you a few reasons why and get into some issues. But before we do that, Kim, I wanted to say just to everybody out there, if you've got computer issues and you are tired of bugging your next door neighbor to help you or calling the Geek Squad and waiting for them to come to your house, you're in luck. Evan, your IT guy, is coming out pretty soon. It's a network of IT professionals. They provide on-demand help for your computer needs. And actually, if you're a small business owner or you're struggling right now with IT, you can go to an in-person seminar that the founder of Evan, your IT guy, Bill Imony, is going to be presenting at the Denver Metro Chamber this Wednesday, August 9th, from 4 to 6 p.m., and you can register at denverchamber.org. You're going to love what he has to say. He's very helpful for small businesses, but also just for individuals, individually. So check out evanyouritguy.com. And also go to the website, scroll down under Discover, hit free webcam cover, and fill out your information and get on their radar and mention the AmeriChicks. And they will send you a free camera cover for your computer so you no longer have that messy, sticky, dirty tape covering up your computer.
I love my little webcam cover here. So very nice. Thank you, Evan, your IT guy.
Yeah. Thanks, Evan. So so we're back in it with Rob Nadelson, and we're talking about the Supreme Court justice. And there have been perhaps a couple of instances lately where they have been wrong in the rulings. And Rob Nadelson has been writing about it. Check out Rob Nadelson's information at Independence Institute, also robnadelson.com. But these two opinions just showed up in The Hill. Is that correct, I believe?
Your articles?
Well, yeah, I fit two articles in the Hill.
Okay. So one we just talked about, which was some campaign finance laws are unconstitutional. So check that out. The next one I want to talk about is who controls the legality of marijuana? Is it the federal government or is it the state? Because here, obviously, in Colorado, we have passed a law that said you can use marijuana not only for medical purposes but for recreation as well. And that, I mean, the business is booming, Rob. It smells like a skunk everywhere I go in this town. but people have wondered, you know, when it comes to who's going to take on the House, you know, who's going to take the Senate and who's going to be the president, is it Republican versus Democrat? They wonder because they think just because of the RRD behind their name is going to mean whether or not the states have the ability to keep marijuana legal or not. But it shouldn't be based on an RRD. It should be based on the Constitution. And Rob, what do you say the Constitution says about who should rule over marijuana?
Well, let me start by, Molly, by making it very clear that the Supreme Court disagrees with me on this. Uh-huh. That in 2005, the court decided a case called Gonzalez versus Raich, in which it held that Congress has the power to regulate even window box marijuana, even marijuana for medicinal purposes in states where medical marijuana is permitted. And they reached that conclusion based upon two clauses of the Constitution. One is the Commerce Clause, which says that Congress shall have the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. And then another part of the Constitution, which says Congress shall have power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying out certain other powers, including the commerce power.
Sure.
Right. And so in this article in The Hill, which is a leading District of Columbia website, I explore the issue of what does the Founders' Constitution have to say about this? What does the real Constitution have to say about this? And in a nutshell, marijuana involves issues of growing, of kind of agriculture, really, involves issues of processing, involves issues of use, and involves issues of transportation. And essentially, the growing, the processing, the use of marijuana under our constitutional system is supposed to be a state issue. I mean, the folks in Colorado who argue that that's a state issue, I think they've got it right constitutionally. As far as the transport of marijuana, same thing if the transport is wholly within the state. On the other hand, Congress does have the power to regulate the interstate transportation or interstate market in marijuana. In fact, they also have the power to ban the interstate transportation or marketing of it. But what goes on within the state is really supposed to be, under the Constitution, the state's business, the business of the people of the state.
And Rob Nadelson, do you say that specifically because marijuana is a plant that is grown, produced, manufactured here in our state? Or would it have to do with any and all drugs as well?
It would actually have to do with virtually all drugs. The founders were very clear, and by the way, just so your listeners understand, my interpretation of the Constitution and the evidence surrounding its meaning has nothing to do with my personal views on marijuana. Okay,
sure.
Nothing to do with my personal views on drugs.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying that the Supreme Court should be talking about too. Is it's not whether it's Republican or Democrat in place, whether it's, you know, whether they agree it should be legal or not. It's what does the Constitution say, and that's your specialty.
I'm glad you helped me make that clear. The founders were very clear that issues of the regulation of agriculture were state issues. They said so explicitly. If you go to rodnadelson.com, you'll find an article listed there called The Enumerated Powers of States. And it collects all these statements by the founders saying what state, what powers would be reserved exclusively to the states. And one of them was agriculture. Another was manufacturing, which in this case, marijuana processing. Another was health laws. Chief Justice Marshall, who was, as you probably know, no enemy to federal power, said health laws of every description is a matter left to the states. It's outside of congressional authority. So the founders were real clear on that. And for folks who might be listening who are saying, well, John Marshall was the Chief Justice in the 1820s and 30s. Was he a founder? The answer is yes, he was. He was a leading voice for the Constitution at the Virginia Ratifying Convention, and it was his representations that helped the Constitution get adopted in Virginia by a very narrow margin.
Mm-hmm. But Rob Nadelson, if you're saying that the federal government, originally our founding fathers said that agriculture should be left to the states, then how is it that our federal government comes in now and limits the amount that is grown by our different farmers of the ag that they have?
Because, Molly, the Supreme Court has stopped enforcing the meaning of the Constitution in certain areas. In the beginning of the late 1930s and throughout the 1940s, the Supreme Court just adopted a supine position. They said, you know, anything you want to do, feds, it's okay with us. That was the era in which they rounded up tens of thousands of American citizens of Japanese descent. The Supreme Court said, okay with us, you know, and in many other ways, the court just basically stopped enforcing the restrictions on the federal government. Now, the court has begun to enforce some restrictions on the federal government again, including some of the woolier uses of the commerce power. But for the most part, those cases out of the 30s and 40s have never been reversed.
Well, Rob Nadelson, wasn't there that case, wasn't that in the 30s? Regarding the regulation of like wheat or something about a farmer?
Rickard versus Filburn is 1942.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a case of a guy who was a farmer and he grew wheat on his own land for use on his own land to feed his own stock. But in doing so, he grew too much wheat according to a federal marketing order. And the court said that under the Necessary and Proper Clause, they didn't say this particularly clearly, but what they meant was, under the Necessary and Proper Clause, Congress, if it wants to, can regulate agriculture in order to regulate interstate commerce. Well, that's a distortion of what the Constitution actually means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they really work at it, they can try to make the Constitution say anything that they want.
Right. This is something called, the founders warned against this, it's called sophistry. Sophistry is an old game that used to be played by some Greek orators. They would convince you that Molly Vogt was the best person in the world.
Hey!
And then the next minute they would demonstrate through their rhetorical power that she was the worst person in the world. That kind of game playing. Mm. Unfortunately, lawyers sometimes are prone to it.
They call that eighth grade girls now.
Yeah. Anyway.
Now they don't limit it to girls anymore. Hey, it's a free world.
There's a lot of sophistry in constitutional interpretation these days.
Hey, that is the... I've been thinking about we should have a word of the week. Sophistry.
Sophistry.
I like it.
So also, Rob Nadelson, you mentioned not only is agriculture supposed to be limited to the state, but also health.
Yes. I think it's clear that the federal government can pass laws which say that drugs, for example, that pass in interstate commerce have to meet some standards. I think that's okay. But I don't think it's okay under the Constitution for the federal government to regulate in detail the manufacturing process or what drugs could be manufactured, processed, and sold solely within a state. That's really something that's supposed to be handled at the state level.
Okay, Rob Nadelson, I've got a question that I can't wait to ask you. We're going to go to break because just on what you just said, I'm going to see if I'm smarter than Rob Nadelson.
Low bar, Kim.
Hey, we're taking bets. Give us a call. 303-632-4160. Is Kimmy smarter than Rob Nadelson?
Probably not.
We want to hear from you.
And now, the Lens of Liberty. Here is Helen Creeble.
In America, we have National Lemonade Day. Thanks to an organization that thought such an event would be a great way to teach kids how to start, own, and operate their own business, a lemonade stand. They host events in 36 cities, but sadly not in hundreds of other communities where kids' lemonade stands are illegal. We all understand concerns about food prepared in kitchens that may not be approved by the health department. But if we look at such rules through the lens of liberty, we should realize they are teaching the wrong lessons. Kids are learning that government regulations, zoning laws, licenses, and taxes destroy their small businesses and discourage them from ever trying again. They're already defeated entrepreneurs. Let's stand up against these foolish regulations and defend freedom, starting with our own children.
The Lens of Liberty is brought to you by the Vernon K. Kriebel Foundation.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and I am so excited that my computer is working just fine today, Molly. But if it isn't, there will be help on the way starting about September 15th. Evan, your IT guy, is going to be up and running. It's a network of IT professionals, and they're ready to provide on-demand help for any computer need. So go to Evan, your IT guy. And if you want to get a really great little handy webcam, scroll down to the bottom of their website under Discover. You'll see free webcam cover. Click on that, fill out the contact form, and be sure to include your address and mention us, the AmeriChicks, and they'll send you a free webcam cover. And then this week, this Friday, there's going to be something really
Wednesday.
Neat. This Wednesday.
August 9th.
I meant to say Wednesday. I was thinking Friday.
Hey,
sorry.
Yeah,
it's
this
Wednesday, 4 to 6. Bill Imony, who is one of the founders of this great company, EvanYourITGuy.com, is going to be making a presentation at the Denver Metro Chamber. And you can register at DenverChamber.org. So that's EvanYourITGuy.com. It's so creative. I just love it.
Well, hey, when you're starting a new business, there's enough pains to deal with. Don't make IT be one of them.
You got it.
So we've got Rob Nadelson in studio, and you had a question.
I had a question.
Him.
Okay, we were talking about the federal government, that it would be constitutional possibly to this is what I heard anyway, Rob, to regulate the quality of drugs that might be going across state lines.
Right.
Okay. So that actually raises two questions, but probably the same answer. And the first is, then could the federal government regulate the quality of food that goes across state lines? And then our friend Jill Vecchio, as much as we've all said that we'd like to have
healthcare
across state lines, available across state lines, she says, wait a minute, that means that Congress can get their paws into everything. So what would your answer be to those two examples?
I think Dr. Vecchio is a very wise woman.
Yes, she is.
When the Republicans talk about making health insurance available across state lines, what they're talking about is using Congress's commerce power to regulate insurance. Now, back at the same time I was talking about earlier, where the Supreme Court kind of laid down and let Congress pass any laws that they wanted to, the court also decided a case called Southeastern Underwriters, in which they said that insurance is commerce, and therefore the Congress can regulate it. The decision was so unpopular that Congress had to pass a law withdrawing from the regulation of insurance. Actually, insurance is not commerce. I mean, not according to how the word is used in the Constitution. Insurance is supposed to be a matter, again, for state regulation. Mm-hmm. So when Republicans talk about forcing the states to allow insurance policies to be available across state lines, I think they're crossing constitutional boundaries. And by the way, they also cross constitutional boundaries when they talk about federalizing malpractice law. In other words, taking lawsuits, ordinary personal injury lawsuits that are supposed to be regulated at the state level and regulating them at the congressional level. A good example of how Republicans, who sometimes talk about protecting the Constitution, are willing to ignore its limits when it suits them.
Well, and the problem is, do they even know what the Constitution says? And,
well, that's right.
Right? So it's not Republican versus Democrat.
But it's also
Constitution.
It's not like this information is unavailable to them. Yeah. I mean, all they have to do is pick up a great book like the original Constitution, what it actually
written
said.
Written by Rob Nadelson.
Right, or frankly, any other good originalist book, to understand what the limits are.
But Rob Nadelson, why would a congressman or woman want to do that or feel the need to do that if they weren't held accountable and forced?
You know, when you folks were talking about this earlier on, about the failure of members of Congress, we can blame the individual members, yes, but also they work in an environment where it is almost impossible to do the right thing.
Yeah.
I mean, give you just one example. Let's suppose, Kim, you're a member of Congress, okay? And someone comes to you and says, you know, we'd like to put a museum in your district in Ohio, right? And we want federal funding for the museum. And you say, well, I'd love to support your museum idea, and I'll give $100 to it myself, but it's simply unconstitutional for the federal government to be spending its money on a museum in Ohio. That's a local or a state issue. What's the response? The response is, well, Congressman Munson, if you won't help us get the money, we'll get somebody in office who will, okay? And since you're not backed up by court decisions enforcing the Constitution, you've now made your reelection vulnerable. It's one tiny example of any number that could be cited to demonstrate that the whole system now is biased against limiting federal power and against doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, Rob Nadelson, you do a lot with Article 5, and we weren't going to talk about this, but I just kind of want to bring it up. As far as you've brought forward two Supreme Court cases, and people can check it out at thehill.com, and also they're up on the AmeriChicks Facebook pages right now, but you said basically that, you know, the Supreme Court ruled the wrong way as far as who's in control of marijuana. It should be the states, not the Fed. And you also said as far as some campaign finance laws, Supreme Court justice didn't get that totally right. We shouldn't have to be listing everybody who's giving towards a campaign. That's not what was meant in freedom of speech versus freedom of the press. So read it. We already went through this. We're not going through it again. But you talk, Rob Nadelson, Article 5, that there is a way for us to change laws and to rein in Congress through Article 5. Is there anything we can do with the Supreme Court justices? Obviously, the way that they are replaced right now, that they're in there for life or something crazy, and then the president at the time gets to, you know, find somebody new. And so it depends on if that person is an originalist or limited government guy or not. Is there anything else other than that?
Okay, well, look, the Constitution consists of the rules of the game. You know, whether you have a good time or whether you make yourself miserable depends on the kind of game you play, right? The outcome from playing Monopoly is very different from the outcome from playing, let's say, tackle football, right?
Not too depends many people, on your family.
Not too many people. Not too many people get
Monopoly
hurt
your
playing
family
Monopoly.
Doesn't depend tackle
my
football.
Family, no. And so if the rules in the Constitution have broken down somewhat, one way to respond is by amending the Constitution to buttress them up. This has been actually done on several occasions with success. And so Article 5 is the part of the Constitution that allows us to amend it. So let's say, for example, we've decided that the Supreme Court, or maybe federal judges generally, have gotten entirely too sold on themselves and they need to be term limited, right? We could support what's called the Convention of States movement, which would put a term, which would authorize a convention to propose an amendment for term limits. Or we could, if we decided we didn't want the federal government just spending anything on any project, we might want a balanced budget amendment. We might support the Balanced Budget Task Force, their effort for a national budget amendment to change the rules.
Okay.
And so that's one way in which we as citizens can respond. That's a little different from the usual, we just elect good people.
Yeah.
Because if we can elect good people, but when they go in a bad system, they find it very, very hard to do much good.
Yeah, right. So I'm glad you said that, because you're right. The Constitution doesn't only explain and limit the president and Congress's position. It always also does the Supreme Court, three branches.
Yes, the Supreme Court, and it sets up, again, the rules of the game by which the federal government and, to a lesser extent, the states operate.
Okay. Last question, Rob Nadelson, I wanted to ask you about it, and Kim to bring up. This is on my radar today. The sanctuary city deal is a big one for me, because it seems like our legislators, and it seems also like our state leaders and our city leaders and our mayors, their role should be to protect we the people, you know, and that means protect the innocent people that are here, living here, citizens that are paying taxes, that are paying them to protect us. But there are certain people like Mayor Emanuel in Chicago and our own, you know, Mayor Hancock and Governor Hickenlooper and these kind of guys that say, well, we want to make sure that illegal immigrants' rights are protected here as well. They've said that the federal government should not be able to tell the state or any cities what they should be able to do as far as criminal aliens and turning them in, that they don't have to turn them in. And so it looks like the Department of Justice said there are certain cities that they're going to withhold some grant money from. And the grant money, I believe it's burn grants, that Federal Burn Justice Association, these assistant grants were put in place to provide, it's about $500 million per year to states, tribes, and local governments to support a broad range of activities, but it's all about preventing and controlling crime and improving the criminal justice system in America and the different states. So the Department of Justice is saying to Chicago, you're not going to get this money if you're not going to obey our new rules so that we can get illegal immigrants out of here if they're criminals. And Chicago says, well, then we are going to sue you, Department of Justice. Yeah, so what's legal here? What's possible?
You know, I actually think what's more interesting is what's political here. A guy like Rahm Emanuel has no problems supporting a program like Obamacare, which seeks to regulate the health care and the health insurance and the conditions of employment of everyone in the country from the federal government. Even though there's nothing in the Constitution that would justify the federal government doing these things. On the other hand, when the federal government is engaged in enforcing immigration laws, which are undoubtedly given to the federal government by the Constitution, it's a federal responsibility. And then he gets up on his high horse and says, you know, we're supporting local control. I mean, it's like something out of Alice in Wonderland. It's just really weird. You know, as for his lawsuit, I don't know what the merits are. It's going to depend on how the statute that Jeff Sessions is using, I think, is written. But I just find it really interesting that a guy who's dedicated his political life to controlling as much as he possibly can from Washington, D.C., and whipping the states into line when they disagree, is now trying to carry the torch for local control. It is very strange.
Now, did you say that was Alice in Wonderland or Rahm in Emanuel Land?
Either one. Or in Chicagoland. I mean, it's the same sort of weirdness.
Oh, man. Hey,
you're either for limited government or you're not.
Or you're not. Yeah. It's a yes or no question. So, Rob Nadelson, great to have you here. We're excited. You're going to be definitely with us every month. It's the first Monday, I think, of every month, unless it's a holiday, and it'll be on Tuesday.
So. Which is the case next month.
That's right.
Because the first Monday, I think, is Labor Day.
Yeah, so it'll be the next day.
And then it's my birthday, so.
Oh, man.
Oh, good.
Party on.
Sweet
party
16.
I'm gonna sing happy birthday for you.
We will.
So. Boy, that'll cause people to switch the dial real quick.
There we go.
Keep coming back.
Yeah, so. Hey, our quote today, Antonin Scalia. Originalism says that when you consult the text, you give it the meaning it had when it was adopted, not some later modern meaning.
This is the AmeriChick signing off. Molly and Kim, we'll see you tomorrow, 5 to 6 p.m. on KBMT.